This is George the Animal Steel. Don't touch that dial. I'll hurt your finger.
It's time for another wrestling podcast.
Are you ready to be the man? You have to be the man. What you gonna do when Hulkamania destroys you?
The kid, you dig that sucker!
Have a nice day!
The champ!
With your hosts, Steve Credo and Jonathan Benjamin.
All right. Welcome to another wrestling podcast. This is episode 60. I'm Steve Credo.
And I'm Jonathan Benjamin.
Jonathan, we have another amazing show today.
I say it a lot, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be the best show yet.
I'm going to hold you to that, Jonathan, because today we have on a WWE legend. He is none other than George the Animal Steel. Hold the turnbuckles, Jonathan, because I think he's hungry today.
Well, we need to watch out for George. Hopefully he behaves himself today. If you're listening to this right now, you need to know that you can meet George, you can meet us, you can meet Bill Goldberg, Jim Ross, Maria Kanellis, and so many more on June 26th and June 27th live in Providence, Rhode Island for the New England Fan Fest. So many great things happening there. There's going to be a dinner and all kinds of stuff. Get on newenglandfanfest.com to buy your tickets. You will see us, like I said, and that's reason enough to go.
That's right. Also, we'd like to thank our friends over at Collector's Realm over in Fishkill, New York. They will be having the animal in the store on June 28th. So if you're in the Northeast and you're looking for some awesome collectibles, guys, head on over to collectorsrealm.net and visit them at the Duchess Marketplace on June 28th because George the Animal Steel will be there live and in person, kissing babies and shaking hands and all that fun stuff. So come on down, say hi.
You know, we like to do a lot of research before we get to an actual show and talk to a guest. So as I was researching, I found out that George the Animal Steel was actually a licensed teacher. He was teaching and wrestling kind of at the same time. I can't imagine walking into class and that being my teacher, but we have some pretty unique jobs as well, and I was thinking today that we should talk about jobs in wrestling, but I was wondering how you thought our jobs would relate to a gimmick in the wrestling world.
That's a good question, Jonathan. Well, let's see. You're a farmer, so you could be like the next Godwin kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I love that idea, but yours may be a little more difficult. You are a big shot in the city. You work for one of those big companies, and you do a lot of stuff with film and editing and stuff. So I'm thinking, stop me if you've heard this, but GTV, like, we never found out what happened. For all we know, you could be the mastermind behind GTV.
I like it. Maybe we could start doing it CTV, like Credo Television.
All right.
Something in the works. I like it. I feel you.
So there's been a lot of full-time jobs in the wrestling world. It's hard enough to have one job, a wrestler, but some of these guys had numerous jobs as well. So today we're going to talk a little bit about that, and we highly suggest that you guys be very social media active with this show. Tell us some of your favorite wrestlers that had another job outside of the wrestling ring. You can follow us, like us, tweet us, all that stuff. So let us know that you're listening to the show and give us some great wrestling jobs. So Steve, right off the bat, the one that always gets me, it's got to be Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Yes, the trash man, Duke the Dumpster Drosy. In the time where he came from, it was a time of lighter heart gimmicks. and jobs, kind of, pretty much. And, you know, when it comes down to it, you needed a trash man. You needed Duke the Dumpster to carry out the trash. But it was good. I mean, I liked it. I didn't really mind Duke the Dumpster Drosy. I was a fan of his. He was I don't know. I think he could have had a lot more potential if he wasn't a trash man, though. But, I mean, hey, someone's got to do the job, right?
Yeah, and I just remember the promos where he was saying things like, it's time to take out the trash in the WWF at the time. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is so cheesy. But I loved it. And I hadn't, you know, he had a brief stint in the WWF then. But he came back at the Gimmick Battle Royal at WrestleMania 17, and it was pretty amazing. So I will always have fond memories of the Dumpster. And is there anybody that you are specifically thinking about that had a job that, you know, wasn't necessarily fitting for the world of wrestling?
Well, one guy that stands out to me would be the Repo Man, former Demolition superstar. But the Repo Man was kind of – it totally reminded me of the Hamburglar from McDonald's. Like, he just – I don't know. He had that little snarky laugh, and, you know, it was just – like I said, this is the same time, you know, the land of the gimmicks, land of that, you know, the early 90s time, late 80s, whatever. You know, it was a lot of silly jobs, but, you know, somebody's got to repossess the stuff that you don't pay for, Jonathan. So we had the Repo Man going around and, you know, doing his job.
I think that my favorite part about the Repo Man, other than the laugh that you mentioned, was the fact that he had on his gear, like, tire tracks, like... Like he'd been ran over, and I never really understood that, because if he was trying to like blend in, like because he had the Hamburglar mask on, I don't think that that would help him blend in unless he was indeed laying on the pavement. So I think he had another gimmick in WCW where he was like a caddy or a golfer. So I think he just couldn't get away from these odd jobs that he was working whenever he was in the wrestling ring. So, yeah, the Repo Man got a couple of action figures out of the deal, so it can't be all bad for the Repo Man.
That's right. Now, Jonathan, so we got a Trash Man, we got a Repo Man. What else is there? I mean, there's definitely a lot more jobs that we talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is more recent times, but we already talked about how George the Animal Steel was a teacher, but also Matt Stryker. He was a licensed teacher here in the Northeast, and he actually was teaching, and they found out about it, and I think that he either got let go or he kind of, you know, dismissed himself. But you know, he had his own talk segment there where he had it was Mr. Stryker's classroom. So, you know, there's always a room. Or there's always room for a teacher, I guess, in the world of wrestling.
That's right. Now, Jonathan, I mean, from teachers to trash men to repo men, there were some sport figure guys in there, too. It's still a job, you know. You could be an athlete and a wrestler. Well, you're an athlete and wrestler, but you know what I mean. But there was one guy who really didn't get quite the spotlight as many others have, and I'm talking about the Goon, Jonathan. The old hockey player, the Goon. Now, like I said, this is a time to, I keep going back to it, to where it was, you know, there's a lot of lighthearted gimmicks and people, you know, everybody had a different a job, you know, a career path they took, and that they're also a pro wrestler. So on the side, the Goon was a hockey player wrestling in his hockey boots without, or hockey skate boot, or I don't even know how to say it, skates without a skate on the bottom, I guess. I mean, that had to be hard enough to wrestle in because they don't bend, really. So, I don't know. Did you ever care about the Goon? I mean, he was a flash in the pan, I kind of think.
You know, I always felt bad for him because he's wearing all those pads and stuff, and he was always, you know, he's like a perfect stereotype for a hockey player. He would come in and, like, you know, pull the shirt over the guy's back and, like, beat him up, kind of like, you know, Adam Sandler did in Happy Gilmore. But Bill Irwin, the gentleman who portrayed the Goon, was, you know, he was a well-known wrestler in the WCCW. He was, you know, Wild Bill Irwin, and he was awesome. So I felt bad whenever he got stuck with that gimmick. But sadly to say, the wrestling fans and all the, you know, network specials and all that stuff don't really show him in that great of a light. But yeah, I think that that was kind of, I think that was probably during a time when hockey maybe had been great, gaining popularity. And so Vince was like, well, we can't have this. We've got to make fun of hockey. So
the goon,
the goon lives. But one of the all time great jobs, unless you were on the bad end of that, was IRS, Irwin R. Scheister. He was the tax man. And I just remember, you know, the him by himself was good, but then they added, you know, the addition of the $1 Million Man Ted DiBiase, and Money Inc. was formed. So I loved it. I think that they're one of the best tag teams ever, and it was just so cheesy. And like his finishing maneuver for IRS was called the write-off, which I thought was like the greatest thing ever. So as I don't like the Taxman 364 days out of the year unless I get a refund, but I loved IRS 365 days a year.
Definitely. And, you know, that's like you said, too. You took the words out of my mouth with him working with $1 Million Man. I mean, alone, IRS was all right, but I don't think he would have lasted if they didn't team him up with $1 Million Man, because, I mean, your money and taxes, what a perfect combination. I mean, they went on forever. And that, like I said, you know, without the $1 Million Man, I don't know how long IRS would have lasted as IRS, but, I mean, he sure did get a lengthy career with that $1 Million, the man at his side. So, they, you know, that worked out for him. So we got tax men, we got hockey players, trash men. Guys, if you're listening to us, once again, I'm stressing it. Jonathan stressed it earlier. Social media, let us know. At a wrestling pod, a wrestling pod on Twitter. Facebook.com/anotherwrestlingpodcast. Tweet us, Facebook us. Let us know what you thought. Some of other jobs maybe we haven't mentioned yet. You know, hey, we can't name them all. And we try, and we beg, and we plead to tell you to get in contact with us, because we want to, you know, interact with you kids out there. So let us know. Jonathan, many jobs in the WWE at this time, many different gimmicks. You mentioned a teacher. One other gimmick I would like to mention is a Dean. Dean Douglas. Many of you know him as the franchise from ECW, who, you know, didn't have that great of a career going in the WWE, but had a phenomenal career after the WWE. But Dean Douglas, Jonathan, kind of reminded me almost like our good buddy Lanny Poffo, the genius, to where he was a dean, he wore that school garb, you know. It's like, is he a school teacher? Is he like, I know he's a dean, but you know what I mean, like the principal? Or I think he never really found his character truly as Dean Douglas, and I don't think they really knew what to do with him.
No, and I just remember him having like a paddle that had Dean on it, and he would always end his promo by running his nails across the chalkboard. So there was some very ridiculous, like stereotypical, once again, Dean things. I don't know that they – obviously he was a good wrestler, but they should have just let him be – the franchise in the WWF, but at that time they were not pushing any boundaries. They weren't doing the Attitude Era yet. It was the early to mid 90s when all these jobs ruled the world of professional wrestling. So one that always got me was, and it was the gentleman who portrayed him, Mike Shaw, who was in WCW, who's also in WWE. He came in, and everybody remembers him as Bastion Booger, which was just this big fat guy that would come out, and his theme music was literally like burps and farts. So if you don't believe me, look it up on YouTube, kids. And but he came in, and he also had a gimmick where he was Friar Ferguson. So he was just a friar, like straight out of Robin Hood. You know, the brown cloak. He had a shaved head. I just don't understand, because I don't think of friars as really violent people, so I don't understand where they were going with that. But Friar Ferguson definitely is honorable mention for one of my favorite jobs in the world of wrestling.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because all I picture is a Robin Hood movie with Kevin Costner, to where the guy who portrayed Friar Tuck, you know, they like messed with his beer or his wine or whatever, and then he just became like, you know, he turned like a little bit violent. So I think that was funny. That just reminded me of that. I don't know. But yeah, Jonathan, I mean, at the time, man, they were just throwing jobs onto any wrestler pretty much. Like, you couldn't just be your own name. You couldn't be this, you know, like Jeff Jarrett. You just couldn't be Jeff Jarrett. You had to be Double J, Jeff Jarrett, the country music singer. You know what I mean? To where they're just throwing out occupations left or right. I mean, it's almost like at a time to where you think they would just run out of jobs. You know what I mean? Like, you have a trash man, a rock star, a hockey player, a friar, a teacher, you know, a tax man. I wonder if there just came a point in time to where it's like, guys, I think we did every job there could be. I don't know what to do next. I wonder if there was ever a conversation about that.
Yeah, I think that happened right at the time when they said, I've got an idea. We're going to make a dentist with – but here's the kicker, everybody. We're going to say that he has really bad teeth, okay? So get it? He's a dentist, and his name will be Isaac Yankum, like yanking teeth. And Vince probably gave that guy a standing ovation. And then his theme music was just literally like
drills. I hated that.
Drilling. Yeah, it was so terrible. But yeah, I guess no occupation was safe during that time period. And that obviously, I don't think it worked out for that guy. Whoever played Isaac Yankum, I don't think anybody's seen him since then. So
that's so funny. Now that I think of everybody's theme music back in the day, like Tugboat is a tugboat. Isaac Yankum was a drill. Diesel was a the horn. Wasn't the Trashman's like a garbage truck backing up or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that they were just like, man, this is the easiest day in the office. Yeah. Or, you know,
the music guy must be like,
what should his theme
be?
Well, what is he? Well, let's see here.
Like a hockey song. The Goon was just like a hockey dun, 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 or something like that, right?
It
was
yeah.
Man, the music guys back then must have just, you know, been really pissed off, because it's like they're really just trying to save money now and not have anybody make any music for anybody and just use the sounds of what they do, and that's it. Man.
Well, you mentioned earlier Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Obviously, he was a singer. Now, we're usually WWE heavy because that's what we know the best, but I'm going to take you back to a time. Now, this was the mid-90s. This was later on, when boy bands were roaming the earth. We had Backstreet Boys, we had NSYNC, we had O-Town and 98 Degrees. But in the land of WCW, we also had 3 Count. Sugar Shane Helms, who later became the Hurricane, Shannon Moore, and Evan Courageous. The three of them were in this boy band called 3 Count, and they would come out and sing, and they acted like they had a record deal, and somehow Tank Abbott got involved in it. It was just a very strange time for WCW and for the boy band industry.
Between Shane Helms and Shannon Moore, it's just funny to think that where they started to where they went and so on. So man, if Shane Helms went from a boy band to a superhero, so hey, I guess anything can happen in the world of pro wrestling. And I don't think necessarily that anything should happen all the time to where they, I don't know, maybe it's just a time period, you know, like when you look back on it, it's like, oh, you know, it was fine then. But when you think about it, like 10 years later, you're like, wow, that was really cheesy. To where I wonder what's going on right now. That might just look really cheesy 10 years from now. I know that we don't really have a lot of jobs, characters per se. Now it's just more about your name, kind of, and how you are almost as a person or a character. So I'd be curious to see if they, you know, kind of bring this back a little bit. You know, just giving other guys more little touches of jobs to where you're not necessarily, you know, a repo man, but maybe you're just like you. I don't know. You steal cars or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? To where it's not necessarily a job per se, but it's part of your character. You know what I mean? It's like that fine line of saying you're a trash man, but, you know, actually just seeing you taking out trash kind of thing. So,
yeah, I think that now, like, with the way the WWE is now, it's more about, like, where you're from. Like, now we know that Cesaro's from Swiss, and we know, or from Switzerland, and we know that Neville's from Wales, and we know that Balor's from Ireland, and we know that Barrett's from, you know, United Kingdom as well. And so I think that it's more of that. Like, it's gone the way of, you know, where you're from instead of what you do.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Some of these have kind of stood the test of time. Obviously, whenever the Big Boss Man came in, and you want to talk about the greatest like theme music of all time, I highly suggest you listen to the Big Boss Man's entrance and not the corporate Big Boss Man, which was just like, da-na-na-na-na. Yeah, that was there. I'm talking about if you ever take a trip down to Cobb County, Georgia. Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
When I was a kid, I always thought it was called Cobb County, Georgia. Like, I didn't really get the Cobb part. I just, you know, I was young. I was a little kid. I just thought they were always saying Cobb County. Like, oh, he's from Cobb County. Of course he's a cop, you know? Like, then I learned that it was Cobb County, and I was like, oh.
Well, yeah, I went to several, vacations whenever I was younger down to Florida, and we would have to stop at, like, a rest stop near Cobb County, Georgia every time because I wanted to, like, take a picture by the sign. So
that's great. Oh, Jonathan wants to stop again. We got to get that sign in for wherever the guy's located, the wrestler's located. That's great. We should – that would be good. We should maybe make a map of where all the stars go, and we'll just have them on our or where they're originally billed from, just to look at a map of where everybody's technically from, you know, just to see it. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Trademark, if you're trying to do it, which is already trademarked by Another Wrestling Podcast. Jonathan, once again, anotherwrestlingpodcast.com, the home of us, the mothership of all of our stuff. Guys, if you missed an episode, head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. Check out all the other great shows. Leave comments. Let us know what's up. And if you listen to a show, past or present, you know, comment, tweet us, Facebook us, let us know, and we'll comment, Facebook, and tweet you back and whatnot. So it's always good hearing from everybody out there. Jonathan, land of the jobs left and right, but today, joining us, he kind of had one of the weird jobs. If you want to explain this a little bit, give me a little bit detail of who we're about to let into our studio as the Animal.
Well, we have none other than George the Animal Steel joining us today. As I mentioned, he was a actual teacher before he got into professional wrestling, and he started to make some money in the wrestling business. So he was working kind of on the weekends as a wrestler, and then he became really, really popular in wrestling. He was also a coach. He coached football, and there's a stadium named after his real name, Jim Myers. George the Animal Steel, amazing, amazing talent, WWE Hall of Famer, and WWE legend. So without further ado, let's talk to Mr. George the Animal Steel.
His signature green tongue and animalistic behavior kept me up all night long as a child. He's an actor, an author, but you know him as an animal. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome George the Animal Steel.
Hey, you!
Well, I guess what I should say is it's George the Animal Steel, but also the gentleman who portrayed him, Mr. Jim Myers. Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I've been blessed, believe me, in many ways.
We will mention it a lot, but we are based out of the Northeast, and there are some exciting events coming up that you'll be a part of. On June 27th, you'll be a part of the New England Fan Fest in Providence, Rhode Island. Have you attended many fan fests over the years? And what are your thoughts about, you know, meeting the fans that, you know, grew up with you?
Oh, I really enjoy it. I've done a lot of them. I haven't done any personal appearances the last year. I've had some health challenges. So I'm really excited to be uncaged and be back out there again.
All right. Now, there's going to be a ton of people there, a ton of your old colleagues, people like Bret Hart, Jim Ross, Bill Goldberg, and many others will be there. Is there anybody that you know of that you're looking to talk to again, some of your old peers maybe?
Oh, you know, whatever happens, I'll be prepared to do it.
All right.
Now,
I'm more excited about seeing fans, really.
All right. So for fans who can't make the trip to Rhode Island, have no fear. Mr. Myers will also be at our friends over at Collector's Realm doing a signing on June 28th at the Duchess Marketplace in Fishkill, New York. With things like the WWE Encyclopedia and the WWE Network, do you get to meet fans that may have never gotten to see you wrestle live before?
You know what? I haven't ran into many of those. The little guys that come up and say, George, and I look at them, they're 7 or 8 years old. I haven't really been on TV since 89 on a regular basis. So I say, well, how do you know me? And they say, well, we play you in the video games. I say, do you make me win? And a lot of them have the action figures and so on, you know, as collectors. So I'm talking about kids that are 7 or 8, 9 years old, are kind of up to date on my character.
That's we do have to ask you, do you spend any time watching wrestling today?
Not very often. Not very often. The business is a great business, but it's changed so much. It's not what we did. And back then, there was a lot of art in working the matches, and that art has been pretty much lost. Now it's pretty much scripted all the way through.
Now, like you said, you don't watch it a lot, but I'm sure that there's some big names that pop out at you. Is there anybody that's wrestling now that you think could probably hang with, you know, you or any of the guys that you wrestled with back then?
Yeah, I think, in fact, one of the guys that is kind of a superstar right now, when he was about 12 years old, was right here in the living room with his mom and dad, Randy Orton.
Oh, okay.
And he's a pretty talented young man that can actually wrestle.
Yeah.
Now, not too long ago, you wrote an autobiography of sorts entitled "Animal." Did you feel good to be able to get all that out on paper?
Yeah, you know, it was very interesting because my book is pretty much about overcoming a lot of different handicaps, and as I was writing the book, I started seeing my own life in the rearview mirror of life, and I could see how God was touching me before I ever really had accepted him. So it was really a touching experience for me.
Now, speaking of that book, we read it, and we think your story of how you got into professional wrestling is just fascinating. Would you care to share some of that with us?
Well, it's kind of unbelievable. I was not a wrestling fan. In fact, I never watched wrestling. I was a football guy out of Michigan State, and I had blown my knee a little bit, so I had started teaching in 1961 for $4,300 a year. I had two children, a third one on the way, and my wife gave me that look, you know, like, we need to eat. And I was looking for a job as a bouncer in the bar with a friend of mine. It was good. I found out that you don't get hired if you're drinking some beer and have a buddy with you as a bouncer in a bar. So about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, he talked me into calling the local promoter. My friend was a huge wrestling fan. So I called Bert Ruby, the Detroit promoter back in the day, and woke him up. And strangely, he invited me over the next day. And from there, I started wrestling under a mask as a student. It took about maybe 3 or 4 months to get acclimated in the gym and also to get my tights and my wrestling boots and all that stuff put together. And we were off and running around the Detroit area and Michigan area, a little bit in Indiana and a little bit in Ohio. As a student, I wore a mask and wore a cap and gown, and lo and behold, I started doing real well at that, at that level, and was getting a lot of work with a lot of great, great workers of the 50s and 40s. The guys like, you probably don't know them, but Leapin' Larry Shane and Lou Klein and Crusher Cortez. These are guys that were back then just monumental workers. So I learned from the best, and then an opportunity came along, and I ended up in Pittsburgh. Bruno Sammartino, you probably heard of him.
Yep.
Came to Detroit with an entourage. He was wrestling Bulldog Brower, and they spotted me there, and I was invited to go to Pittsburgh to wrestle Bruno. Now, I think a lot of this was put together by a guy that was also one of my mentors, Gino Brito. And so I went to Pittsburgh. I had my mask and cap and gown, and they said, no, we don't want that. We want you. And I said, well, I don't want to use my real name. And so one of the fellows there said, well, this is a Steel City. Let's call him Jim Steele. I said, I don't like the Jim Steele. Somebody else said George. So that part of my body is only about 43 years old now. It was in 1967.
Wow.
Well, there was also a part of the book that said that you were actually a teacher at that point, which is just amazing to me to think that back then you were teaching and wrestling. Were there any challenges that you could see with doing both of those at the time?
Well, the challenge all the time. I taught from 1961 and I retired from teaching in January of 1986. I wrestled from in the WWWF and the Pittsburgh thing. Started in 1967, and I was there until 1989. But I was also a school teacher and coach at all that time. So, you know, I always looked at my full-time job as teaching and coaching and my part-time job that made it so that I could afford to teach and coach as my wrestling career. So it's a little bit backwards. Most guys wrestle full-time. I did not do that. I'd go back and teach during the school year and coach football and wrestling.
Now, we just heard how you got the name George Steele, but how did you get the moniker The Animal?
Have you ever seen a picture of me? Have you ever seen me in the ring?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if there was maybe another kind of a story about how it came about, but...
There is. When I first went to the Northeast in the WWF, they called me the Detroit Destroyer. But because of the hair and what was going on in the ring, the fans started calling me an animal. And I would get on the microphone, I'm not an animal, I'm a people. And, you know, I used to do my own interviews and talk and do all that wonderful stuff. And finally the fans just got into the animal so strong that the WWE people woke up and decided that maybe they should call me George the Animal Steele. And that stuck for a long time. Wow. Until now.
Now, so the two things that you're most known for in wrestling are the green tongue and you ripping apart and eating the turnbuckles. So we kind of have a two-part question here. What did the turnbuckles taste like? And how long after your match did your tongue stay green?
Well, you know, the tattoo lasts forever. And if you believe that, I've got some oceanfront property for you in Kentucky.
All right. Perfect. I was looking
then,
into that.
Actually, what happened was, no one knew, you know, back in those days, we didn't have a creation team that decided the personalities and so on and so forth. What happened with the green tongue is that I had a couple of drinks. I didn't want the promoter to know it. So I put a Clorets in my mouth. And went on live TV. Now, this is live TV, but it's just now when color TV is coming out. In other words, I was black and white TV, and the color's coming out, and all of a sudden, on your color TV shows up a guy with a strange-looking tongue. People thought their TVs were screwed up. The switchboard lit up, and I kind of laughed about it. I didn't know that I had a green tongue at that time, but when the switchboard lit up, people started talking about it, I realized that I'd done it with a Clorets. So about 3 months later, I did the same thing for my own personal enjoyment and a laugh, and I had the green tongue again. The switchboard lit up again, and from that time on, I had the very best breath in all of wrestling.
Now, you're a pretty intimidating guy in the wrestling ring, but we hear, you know, wrestling is a sport full of practical jokers. Did anyone ever try to pull any pranks on you?
You know, no one ever messed with my body or any of my suitcase in El Tuve, because I wouldn't have, you know, that would have been a problem, a serious problem. I didn't mind a few head game type ribs, but that other stuff that some of the guys pulled, that didn't happen to me, and it wouldn't, because it would be a real problem.
All right.
Not acceptable.
Yep.
Absolutely. Now, you're a two-time Wrestling Hall of Famer, WWE Hall of Fame in 95, and then the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame as well. Are you satisfied with the way your wrestling career turned out?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, come on. First of all, I didn't plan on being a wrestler. I never worked at it. It just happened. And somehow, I got very good at it. Now, I could wrestle on a mat. I was a wrestling coach for 17 or 18 years in Madison Heights. We won a state championship and had a lot of state champions. But pro wrestling is a bit different, and it come to me fairly natural. At first, when I first saw what it was all about, when I went to the gym and started showing me how to work, I thought they was challenging my integrity as an athlete. I really didn't like it. But once I learned to relax and understand the art of the work, I really enjoyed professional wrestling and put it in a very high esteem for my life. Just kind of the way it worked.
All right. Now, you are well known for your involvement with Randy Savage, but people seem to forget you played a major role in the WrestleMania 3 match with Savage and Steamboat. That match is highly regarded as one of the best matches of all time. When you were there watching it live, did you realize just how special that match would turn out to be?
Oh, boy. That match happened to be at the Silver Dome in Detroit, which is about 15 minutes from my home where I lived at that time. And the idea that I was going to be in a corner with the Dragon, and Elizabeth was going to be in the other corner, and I was supposed to be schmitten over her, really didn't get me too excited, to be honest with you. I would much rather had my own match in my hometown, in the largest event that there ever has been, in an indoor event. And so I was a little bit disappointed in that part of it. And then the match was, it was a great match for the fans, but it was so redundant, overdone so many times and talked about so much and how they were going to do it, that actually it got kind of boring for me. We didn't know back in that day. That was a new breed doing things a different way. We used to call almost everything that happened in the ring while it was happening. This was all pretty much predetermined, but it was predetermined very well. So my take on it was a little bit different than the fans. So be it. That's just the way it is.
Absolutely. Now,
Randy was an excellent wrestler and a great performer with a great, great profession. I'm not knocking either one of those guys. That was a great match, just not one that I was excited about being around.
Yeah. Well, so is there a certain match maybe that you were a part of either early on in your career or later on in your career that you really, really enjoyed?
I was very blessed once I got the mask off. Now, I worked with a lot of guys that you don't know of early on. In fact, Randy Savage's father, Angelo Papa, was one of them in the Detroit area when I was wrestling as a student. So I had great experience there. Then when I came to the WWWF and then the WWF, I had an opportunity to wrestle with the greatest of all time, so many of them. I had some great matches in every major arena in the Northeast with Bruno Sammartino, who I think is the greatest champion of all time, regardless of any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had an opportunity, and I worked with the next champion, babyface champion, with Pedro Morales. And I had a short run with him because he only had the title for about a year and a half, 3 years. Then on come Bobby Backlund, who was a great champion, regardless of what people think. He was around there for about 8 or 9 years as a champion. And then I had a short run with Hulk Hogan. So, I covered a long spear of some great, great champions. I think that of those I just named, probably the WWF champions, they might have been the greatest of all time. Bruno, I think, had the belt twice, and it covered a long period of time, like I think it was 12 or 13 years. Bobby, the same situation. And then Hulk Hogan changed the business forever with his great charisma and his look in the ring. So, yeah. After that, a lot of guys have changed with the belt and so on and so forth, but I don't know of any of them that has really impacted the business like the ones I just named.
All right. Now, in the world of wrestling today, there seem to be less characters. Do you think that there might be room for a character like the Animal to exist today, maybe an updated version of what you did?
It could be, but business has changed a lot. And, the name of the wrestler or the talent is not that important. Vince has done a great job of marketing the name of the company, WWE. It's more like the circus coming to town. And so when the WWE's coming to town, or the circus was coming to town years ago, they didn't put the names of the guys on the high wire up there, who's going to be in the cage with the lions, all that stuff. It was just part of the circus. And I think that's kind of what's happened to the business now. Whatever's going on during the matches or during the show is just part of the show. It's the WWE show. So I don't know of any name that really is out there that is any bigger than the WWE. Can you think of one wrestler that has a bigger name than the WWE?
No.
Unless it's Vince McMahon?
No.
I mean, so that's just how I see it.
Sure.
That's not a knock. It's just a a great way to do the business.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, a lot of people, if they haven't read your book, they may not know, but you've also served sort of as an inspiration probably to a lot of people. You had dyslexia and also Crohn's disease. Now, do people come up to you now and, you know, talk to you about that? Or do you ever talk to, you know, school groups or anything about those sorts of things that you...
Oh, yeah. I have a website, georgetheanimalsteel.com. And I have people coming on it often talking about the dyslexia. They might have a problem with their children, although their problem that they have today is not anywhere near what I had. Because back when I was a kid in the 40s, in the early 50s, they didn't know what dyslexic was. So it was just okay, go sit in the back of the room. I mean, you know, as a big dummy, go sit in the back of the room because he couldn't hardly read or write. What they have found out about people with dyslexia, they're basically... they have great memories, and they're very, very intelligent people. A lot of lawyers. Well, I don't want to go that direction. doctors and people. Einstein was very dyslexic. So what can I tell you? Once I figured out what was going on, and I got through Michigan State barely. The book talks about that too. It talks about the dyslexia, then going to Michigan State, not really being able to read or write, having my struggles there. By the time I got out and getting into the high school and teaching and coaching, things are starting to, you know, level out a little bit with my dyslexia and my my way of handling it. 3 years ago, I was really humbled when I got a phone call from one of the board members at Madison High School where I coached, telling me that they were going to name the stadium after me. That was humbling, and I didn't think it was worthy. And I told him, I said, you know, I don't think you should do that right now. They said, why not? I said, well, an honor like that should not be given to anyone until after they're dead, because we can still screw up. They said, well, we're going to do it anyhow. We'd like to have you come and take part in it. So I did, and it was a wonderful, humbling experience. But again, to me, that's bigger than the I'm also in the Michigan Football Coaches Hall of Fame and the Michigan Coaches Hall of Fame. So, you know, those Hall of Fames to me are just as much important as the WWE or the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. They're all great honors.
Sure. Now, as we mentioned earlier, you're an accomplished actor. How did you decide that you wanted to be on the big screen?
Well, I didn't make that decision. Like everything else, it just happened.
Sure.
I got a phone call from Tim Burton telling me that they're going to make this movie, Ed Wood, and that I looked like one of the major characters that Tor Johnson, who was a wrestler, and that I looked an awful lot like him, and that was kind of flattering. I thought, wow, I look like a movie star. And then when I finally got the part and started researching it, I found out that Tor Johnson was the first guy to do monster movies without makeup. What can I tell you?
Now, about that, I found a little piece of information. I guess that they weren't accounting on you to being so quick and so athletic whenever they filmed it. So they actually made you, I don't know if this is true or not, this is just something I read, they actually made you wear things to slow you down a bit when you were filming. Is that true?
I have a pair of shoes yet that they had on me that elevated me like 5 inches taller, because Tor Johnson was 6'9", and I'm only 6, at that time, 6'2". I'm still shrinking now, but yeah, that was clumsy to walk in, and they dressed me some strange stuff, and yeah, it was. But you know what? The movie won 2 Academies. It was a black and white movie. One of the accomplishments of Tim Burton and Johnny Depp was just outstanding. And who won the Academy? Come on.
Was it Martin Landau?
Martin Landau, thank you.
No problem.
There we go.
We're supposed to need all the help we can get.
Hey, that's all right.
What is it that Jim Myers enjoys doing with his spare time?
Now, I'm very involved in my my church work. I do a lot on the internet with my website. I'm involved with a lot of different people in a lot of different areas. It's just my way of trying to give back in many different ways. I'm, you know, I still don't look that bad, people ask me, well, do you still wrestle? And I say yes, to get out of bed. But I've just been blessed. I'm 78 years old now, so, you know, my life has changed a whole lot, and it's really become more and more positive. I have a great peace with my faith in Jesus, and very comfortable with where I'm at in my life now, and ready for whatever happens.
Well, we also know that you're a huge baseball fan, minor league and major league. Are you a Detroit sports fan, though?
Oh, absolutely. I even love the Detroit Tigers
and
the Lions and the Pistons. And the Lions, when I was a kid in the 50s, they were pretty good. I hope that they get to a Super Bowl before I pass on. But that's getting to be a little tough. When they let Sue get away, I thought, oh, boy, here we go.
Well, we definitely want to just thank you so much for coming on today. I know that you're a busy gentleman. You mentioned that you have a website, georgetheanimalsteel.com. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is there any other thing that you have out there, or do you mainly just communicate through there?
I do a lot of my community. I was going out and doing a lot of speaking engagements and doing personal appearances and shows like we're going to be doing in Rhode Island. But with my health challenges, I haven't done anything for a year. I just cut everything down. The guy that I'm coming in with, Joe, is bringing me in, and he's just a good guy. He's bringing me my wife with me, which makes life a lot easier for me and her. So, I'm looking forward to this event probably more than any because it's been so long since I've done anything.
Well, we'll be at both of those. We cannot wait to talk with you some more. We thank you so much for being on today. And June 27th in Providence, Rhode Island, and June 28th in Fishkill, New York. So, Mr. Jim Myers, George the Animal Steel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, no, thank you for having time for this old guy. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
All right, once again, thank you to George the Animal Steel. Guys, if you didn't hear at the top of the show, we're going to tell you again, head on over to collectorsrealm.net. George the Animal Steel will be live and in person at the New England Fan Fest on June 27th, also at Collector's Realm on June 28th over in Fishkill, New York. So wherever you're located in the Northeast, you have 2 days and two chances to meet this WWE Hall of Famer and legend. So guys, don't miss that opportunity to meet this great guy. And he's great with everybody. I mean, I remember I met him a few times. He lets me put him in a headlock, choke him out a little bit. And at the end of the day, you walk away with a great photo. So guys, I can't stress it enough. Once again, thanks again to Collector's Realm and the New England Fan Fest. Guys, you have two chances to meet him coming up. So stay tuned about that, huh?
Yeah, and we have so many more jobs to talk about, but we would be here all day if we talked about them all. So we're just gonna kind of pick out some of the better ones that I would say. So I have to talk about a group. Now, this group had a singular job. They all came in, and this was later on. So this, once again, wasn't around the 90s. This was in the 2000s. And they were tag team champions. They were the Spirit Squad. And they were all male cheerleaders. So they were brought in by Mr. McMahon. And for what reason, a lot of people will never know. But they were by far my favorite characters and jobs of all time. I used to dress up like them and go to house shows. And people would just hate me. Like, they would literally hate me. So if you're listening to this and you remember that time period, like yelling at some guy dressed up like a cheerleader, it was me, and I apologize for nothing.
Man, no offense, Jonathan. I know you like him, but I never really liked him that much. I don't know. I just didn't like him.
I just loved their theme whenever it was just like, Nikki, Johnny, Mikey. That was it. It was just so amazing. So I watch a lot of, like, I think I own, like, every piece of Spirit Squad merchandise that there was, which there wasn't a lot, I'll be honest, but yeah.
Jonathan owns it all. So if you guys are a big Spirit Squad fan, Jonathan has all the memorabilia ever made.
And send me anything that I don't have.
Well, while you were liking the Spirit Squad, Jonathan, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the dancer gimmicks that we've had through the years, from Disco Inferno to Brodus Clay, his horrible debut on that. But we've had a few dancers come and go, but the one dancer who's kind of stuck around and the fans have gotten behind is Fandango, Jonathan.
That's Fandango.
That's right. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, you were there, WrestleMania, the Raw after WrestleMania 29. The fans loved it. They loved doing the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know what I mean. Who would have thought, Jonathan? Who would have thought this kind of dancing gimmick would ever go over? Because, I mean, with Brodus Clay, that kind of failed. People wanted him to be a monster. They gave him a dancing bear gimmick kind of thing, and it was just like, I liked it for a minute. And then, you know, like, even like the Rikishis, to where, you know, that wasn't his main thing, but, you know, another dancing gimmick. And then who could forget Disco Inferno, the true legend of the dancing gimmick. But Fandango, man, what do you think? I mean, he's probably, I mean, granted, he hasn't had the greatest career as of late, but I mean, he had a WrestleMania match, and the fans still love it. I don't know what they plan on doing with him anymore, but I mean, do you think Fandango could be the last of the dancers?
He may be for a while. And you know what? He's like such a great talent, even without being a dancer. Whenever they had NXT, not the one that they have now, but the competition show, I thought the two best things on that show were Johnny Curtis, who's Fandango, and Derek Bateman. They were like the two greatest things that had happened for a long time. And also, if you haven't seen that, get on YouTube and check out those clips, because they're hilarious. So I think Fandango will be around for a while. They may give him another character change, but I'm thinking that he's going to do some big things in the future.
Sure. All right, Jonathan. Well, hey, everybody's heard us talk about all these jobs and all these wrestlers that they've had. Can you think of, maybe I'll throw you on the spot, a past and a present that maybe somebody that we didn't already talk about, if you could just, you know, wrangle in your brain somebody in the past who you just really thought was awesome, and maybe somebody in the present who has a job that you really like today?
All right. So as far as the past, somebody that I really liked for obvious reasons was Val Venus. His job was to be a porn star. He came in during the Attitude Era, you know, and for all of you who are listening right now, we spoke with Val Venus, and you should go back and listen to that show and all of our other shows on iTunes. But Val Venus was a great gimmick. I thought it was hilarious. I don't think it was before its time. I think it was one of those that fell right in line with it. It got a little silly when Kai and Tai got involved, but that's neither here nor there. But as far as today goes and gimmicks that are jobs, it's I don't know. That's difficult. I don't know that there are very many that are around today. I can think of one, but I don't want to take that one right now because you may use it here at the end. So I'm going to flip the script, as they say, as you kids say, and I'm going to ask you to think of one that's popular in the past and one that you like now.
Well, Jonathan, one we haven't mentioned, I would like to bring up. I know not a lot of people liked him, but during the time period that I was growing up, I loved him. My family loved him. And, you know, he just brought entertainment every time we went to the show. And that would be Brutus the Barber. Beefcake, man. He cut people's hair in the ring when he beat them. He brought out huge hedge clippers that were supposed to be scissors. How could you not like Brutus the Barber Beefcake growing up as a kid? I mean, he was just a big barber. I don't know. I mean, it was fun. He was always entertaining. And then he became, you know, pretty much Hulk Hogan's buddy. And the rest is history. But I don't know. I loved him. Did you love Brutus the Barber?
Yeah, I loved Brutus Beefcake. His outfits left a little bit to be desired. But other than that, yeah, he was a good performer.
That's right. And currently, I know we said we couldn't really think, because there really isn't too many guys. Like I said, it's pretty much everybody just has a name. Almost, or unless they just have a really gimmicky character. But, I mean, we already talked Fandango, too, so I'm not going to use him. But if I had to pick one other person, Jonathan, in today's day and age, if you will, that has a job. I guess this is still a true legend, and I guess you can kind of count it as a job. But Jonathan, none other than Jerry the King Lawler. I mean, he's always going to be the king, no matter who wins the King of the Ring. He's always royalty, huh?
Yeah.
Someone's got to do it. It's good to be the king, right?
It is great to be the king. That is not the one I was thinking of, so now I'm glad that I can say this. Probably the most long-lasting job that he started out as this person, he's still this person, and that would have to be The Undertaker.
That's right.
He started out with Paul Bearer, which is another job, really, if you think about it. Yeah. And they built, you know, caskets. They did the whole thing. He started out as an Undertaker. He is still the Undertaker. So I think that's probably the most famous wrestler who had a full-time job as well as wrestling that ever lived. So I think The Undertaker definitely takes the cake.
That's right, Jonathan. I couldn't agree with you more, The Undertaker. Jonathan, we talked about a lot of jobs here and there from yesterday and today. It's interesting because, like, you know, we had the reality era, the attitude era. Back in the 90s, I guess you could call that, like, the job era, pretty much. Like, everybody's character had that, you know, big job or whatnot. Wow. It's fun to think about, though. It's good to talk about. And once again, guys, everybody listening out there, let us know. Who did we leave out? Did you have, you know, gimmicks or people who had these jobs that you just really hated? Or ones that you just really loved? Let us know. AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com. Tweet us, Facebook us, and let us know.
Community calendar.
And coming up on July 18th from 12 to 2 p.m., Tito Santana will be in Beacon, New York at Tito Santana's Taqueria. No relation. But guys, head on over to tacosantana.com. Head on over to AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com. Find out more information how you can meet and greet Tito Santana and get a free taco.
That's right, Steve. And we're also going to be at Northeast Wrestling's Wrestling Under the Stars 4, August 1st, 2015 in Fishkill, New York. You'll get to see such legends as Ric Flair, Mickey James, Alberto El Patron, Rey Mysterio Jr., The Young Bucks, Jerry the King Lawler, NXT's own Samoa Joe, Northeast Wrestling Champion Matt Taven, Brian Anthony, the genius Lanny Poffo, and much, much more.
As we are headed on our way to the New England Fan Fest, we're going to be talking to Jim Ross on June 25th, the weekend right before Fan Fest. Guys, so what a lineup. A lot of great guests coming up in the next few weeks, so make sure you subscribe to us and don't miss a show. It's easy, guys. Head on over, like Jonathan said, AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com. Click on all the buttons on the top, all the links from iTunes to Stitcher to Player FM to TuneIn. We're out there. Like us, follow us, and subscribe to us. And Jonathan, if you're looking for some clothes to wear and you don't really have anything to wear for a night out on the town, and maybe you're going to a wrestling show and you just need a new shirt, well, head on over to prowrestlingtees.com/AnotherWrestlingPodcast. Pick up some original AWP shirts.
We want to thank all of our fans and listeners out there, so tune in next week for
Another Wrestling Podcast.